Oh, tēnā koe, Claudia. It's always a pleasure to join you. Tēnā koutou katoa whānau. So the bill that I again have been fortunate to have drawn from the members' ballot is titled the Protection of Journalist Sources Bill. And essentially, that piece of legislation, from my perspective, really upholds the kaupapa that our journalists aspire to. And that kaupapa is about actually telling us what's happening in Aotearoa, what's happening in certain aspects of our society. And currently, under the Evidence Act, journalists are and journalist sources can be protected via what's called journalistic privilege. But within the context of the definition of who that applies to, historically, investigative journalists haven't been covered. And so the intention of this bill is to broaden the definition to include investigative journalists. And an example of an investigative journalist is someone like Nikki Hager, who does lots and lots of research, who has informants, who give him information. And from that work, he then produces a book, and he did that, and that book was called Dirty Politics. And so I want to make sure that people like Nikki Hager are protected based on the sources that they receive as investigative journalists to provide and produce books. And the other aspect of the law is that it clarifies in the Search and Surveillance Act the process that the police have to go through when they determine whether or not someone is a journalist. And if they are a journalist, then they can't search or seize their property, which is what happened to Nikki Hager. And there's been other interesting cases. Kim.com versus the Attorney General. There were documents held by his journalist who wrote his biography, The Secret Life of Kim.com. So David Fisher was also subject to a threat for him to release those source documents. And in all these instances, the journalists have been really clear that they have an ethic and moral obligation based on them being investigative journalists to protect their informants or their sources, because obviously what those sources are giving them are material information that could highlight corruption, it could highlight deficiencies in decision-making processes. And obviously, from my perspective, it is really about the freedom of the press to report and to do their job within a context that not only are they safe, but also the people that give them that information. Otherwise, it would never come to light.
Yes. So there is a precedence for this internationally. There are some countries that have this type of, I'm thinking about the United States. And then there are some countries, and I'm thinking about, perhaps China, that do not have this. So it's interesting that it's only lately that we have wanted to have this included to safeguard our journalists and their sources. I guess, really, would you, in your opinion, would you think that Nikki Hager would be the first one to really bring it forward into the public arena, the necessity to have this?
Yeah, I think that what happened to Nikki Hager in 2014, when his place was raided and searched by the police, really provided an example for us of what happens to people when we don't have laws in place that can protect him and protect the people that gave him the information that enabled him to write his Dirty Politics book. I think, from my perspective, though, the greater good of journalists exposing corruption in our society really does need to be highlighted at this time. And I know internationally there's been a really big focus on the role of journalists in keeping governments, keeping rulers, keeping big corporations accountable to the public. And unfortunately, we've seen quite a few instances in the last few years of journalists who do that, who have actually died. They've been killed, they've been murdered because they have had the audacity to tell the truth and to want the public to know what's happening in different regimes. I'm not going to talk about specific instances internationally, but also this year, two journalists were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, because in fact, a lot of what those journalists are doing in exposing this type of corruption is absolutely putting themselves in danger, and they need to be and have the full, from my perspective, protection of the law. And we all have to be very clear that press freedom, freedom of expression, actually is fundamental to a functioning, healthy democracy, which is what we are. So this is my attempt to, I guess, honour the journalists and their role within our society. Some people call them the fourth estate, because they really are, and people like you, Claudette, are really there to make sure that the public have information, that so that they understand what's happening, so they're informed about what's happening, and also so they can make decisions about who they think are making the best decisions on our behalf, and not only for themselves, but for the greater good. And that's, in fact, what the profession is, I think, here to do and should do in an environment where they're valued and respected. And there are also mechanisms within the Search and Surveillance Act for a judge to override, where he thinks that actually the public good means that we should know where this information comes from. And there are abilities, I think, already in the law to protect if someone's information is stolen, for example, for it then not to be used or not to be publicised. So this was really about increasing the definition of who a journalist is to investigative journalists, and also ensuring that the police could be held accountable if they didn't follow the process to ensure that journalistic privilege was upheld.
So immediately the word that comes to mind when we talk about sources is whistleblowers. What is the difference between the whistleblower, who is also very important and who also needs this type of protection, and a journalist source? Because at times they can be the same, and in some areas it's a little bit grey. So is there a part to play for whistleblowers in this bill?
No, that's a really, really good question. And in fact, I approached the Minister of State Services, because he had a bill going through the House just in the immediate past, which was going to protect whistleblowers. And I think the difference between whistleblowers and informants is, in fact, in principle, nothing. Because what they're doing is sharing information that they've garnered because of the role that they have within an institution. And what they're trying to do is say, I don't think this practice is safe, or I don't think this decision was a good decision. It wasn't based on really good, robust principles or ethics. And I want to be able to tell somebody so that we can stop this happening again, or to hold someone accountable because they haven't followed the rules. And when we looked at whether or not that could cover this, it was outside the scope of that bill, because that bill was very much focused on people within the public service and creating a mechanism for those people to be able to speak up if they think the practices within their organisations are not achieving the purpose of the organisation. And so in coming forward, they shouldn't be penalised if, in fact, the reason they're doing it is in the public good, because they want to expose something that they think's not right. Now, informants do that as well, but often there can be, a political dimension, or a dimension that is related to the context they work in. It might be a large corporate and they want to expose practices that actually are both unlawful but also unethical, that may have affected or harmed other people. And so we just have to, from my perspective again, as I said, ensure that we have an environment that is very much about transparency. It's about exposing the truth, and it's also about protecting the people who in some instances are brave enough to come forward and share their experience. They shouldn't be penalised. They actually should be protected, and we need them to come forward. Otherwise, how are we going to know if there are deficiencies in our system or corrupt practices if we actually encourage silence? And this bill very much is about encouraging people to have the freedom to speak, knowing that when they do so, for a purpose, which is for the greater public good, that we've got their back essentially, and they will be protected, and so there won't be any negative consequences for them in coming forward.
And so you talked about the Fourth Estate. Does the bill would necessarily be extended to include the Fifth Estate? And Nikki Haga, the likes of Nikki Haga and Bomber Martin Bradbury, who we're talking to later on this afternoon, who is also caught up in the dirty politics and who also had his home raided, they're online. They are considered... they consider themselves to be journalists. So the definition of journalism then would necessarily then need to include those types of writers. However, they do not write for establishments per se. In fact, they are the type of writer, journalist, that would prefer not to write for establishments. So does it include... that does it extend out to those community of writers?
That's a really, really good question. And the reason I highlight that is you're right, because within the current definition, you have to be a journalist. That's also assumed you're employed by a media outlet and you publish on a daily or a weekly basis to be covered. And so in expanding the scope of it being an investigative journalist, expanding the scope that actually it's about maybe producing a book, which could take years, and then you're still being caught within the context of journalistic privilege. I think people who are bloggers, who are not only social commentators, but they may be allowing other people's views and opinions to be expressed, can be covered. I think it's a good question for the select committee to discuss and to ensure that they are covered. I make the distinction, though, between people who have a social media platform and they may actually have a contract and they may promote a certain thing, which ends up being more about PR or public relations as opposed to operating as a journalist. And I think that that distinction should be made, because journalists actually report on facts. They don't create facts. Their job is to gather all the information, gather all the evidence, speak to a range of people, and then present to the public, you know, a very coherent story about a phenomenon, about something that's happened. People who are paid via PR firms are there to spin something in a particular way that will produce an outcome that they've paid for. And I think there's a distinction. And so people who have these platforms, yes, there are some aspects of their work where they may be being a journalist and providing the public with, you know, ethically considered information. But there are others who are using their platform as a business, and it's for, you know, personal gain, and they're getting paid to, as I said before, to promote a particular person or a particular position on something. And I see those as two different things.
The media industry is very clear about who is and who is not, you know, who are PR maidens and who yeah. are not PR people. I think they do quite a good internal self-auditory of their of themselves and their cohorts. The other issue is, you know, as soon as, you know, you said the word or you said the phrase freedom of speech, and of course Māori would go, you know, we don't want that type of freedom of speech, and not when it comes to breaking stories that would expose corruption or ill will. But then again, you see Māori have an issue when it does come to freedom of speech that actually denigrates us. There is a clear distinction between your bill and how we perceive freedom of speech in terms of denigration, but is there flexibility, is there wriggle room for those types of people who do wish to denigrate communities, who do wish to denigrate Indigenous people, is there wriggle room for them to be protected under your bill?
Well, this bill is very much about protecting the informants or the sources who give information to journalists who then base a story on that information. And within that context, though, I think you're right to highlight the ethical principle of do no harm. And to be honest, I think that the media has grown up within the context of do no harm, and particularly around Māori issues. So we've seen Carmen Parahi and the whānau from Stuff really come out, you know, previous Fairfax, and be really clear that they have an obligation to ensure that when they're reporting on stories related to Māori, they do it in a way that's not going to, that isn't racist, actually, and doesn't denigrate us, or that doesn't misrepresent our culture and our language and our positioning on different things. I mean, I've had a little bit of an example myself of holding the Fourth Estate to account with our Nisbet cartoons. Yes. And, you know, that, you know, none of that I would have thought should ever have come to light if you were practicing from a base of doing no harm and taking some responsibility for the images or the commentary that you're putting out there and how it positions certain people. But I do. I think the media understand the power that they have. They understand the influence that they have. And although I don't actually see them as the same thing within the context of this bill, what I do think is really important is that the analysis and assessment of the information that journalists get, they still have to take it through another level of assessment about how they present that information to the public to help the public, as I said before, understand why certain things have happened or how certain things have happened, who have been the beneficiaries of those decisions, who in fact have been the losers. And I actually think that's what investigative journalists at the heart of what they do are trying to communicate, which is to expose when they have seen something that's occurred that actually has been incredibly harmful for the public, for democracy, and for our country. And so
where do you think then that Te Tiriti or Waitangi plays in this bill?
That's, again, a very good question. Obviously, I think that it's becoming more and more relevant, I guess, how Māori contribute in this space, the stories that we choose to report on, the manner in which we report on those stories, who we get to contribute in terms of their voice, a Māori narrative within the information that we provide to the public. And I think that's a really good question, actually.